kind of assault on values and on rights, basic human values and basic human rights, to go on throughout the campaign.
We have to leave it there. Jody Jacobson, we have to leave it there. We will link to your piece at Rewire. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. The topic is the state of American political discourse.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Crybaby, produced and performed by Stageworks, Inc. Crybaby will take place at the Clinton Street Theater Friday and Saturday, October 14th and 15th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, October 16th at 2 p.m. Crybaby Live is a rockabilly musical homage to the John Waters cult classic film set in the 1950s in Baltimore. Again, that's Crybaby, the play, at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
That was sung by a prisoner during a performance in the Oregon State Penitentiary about solitary confinement. This prison performance inspired Within These Walls, a Portland community event. Hear Within These Walls on Prison Pipeline, October 17th at 6:30 p.m.
I know why the cage bird sings. This cage is my stage. When I am on, I'm free.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Eco Film Festival, Thursday through Sunday, October 20th through 23rd, at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. The Portland Eco Film Festival is the premier environmental film festival in the United States Pacific Northwest, showing the very best films about nature, the environment, outdoor pursuits, and eco-conscious living. Films that will be shown include Seed, The Untold Story, Silent Running, Saving Jamaica Bay, and many more. Again, that's the Portland Eco Film Festival, Thursday through Sunday, October 20th through 23rd, at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage, under Community Events.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call to talk on the air is 231-8187. What are we doing today, Abe?
Oh, I don't know. Nothing interesting's happened.
Nah, not much going on.
Maybe we could talk about baseball.
Baseball?
No. I want to talk about Donald Trump.
You want to talk about Donald Trump?
Yeah. There was a video recording that was released last week. Perhaps you heard about this.
I saw it.
Did you?
I did.
Yeah. Well, it portrayed Mr. Trump back in 2005 on a hot mic, saying some things that were could be perhaps construed as imprudent.
Well, imprudent would be. Yes, imprudent. Yep. But also very revealing of a really, 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 really weird kind of assaultive, is the only word I can think of, attitude toward women in general, attractive women in particular.
What? Misogynist?
Oh, misogynist, yeah.
Demeaning?
What?
Demeaning?
Yeah.
Aggressive?
Yeah.
Objectifying?
Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps even criminal?
If in fact those acts were carried out, they would be criminal.
Yes. Yeah, all of those adjectives work, I think.
Yeah. And it's given how he's reacting to having had that released, I suspect there's a lot more tape out there.
Well, I suspect. But there's a number of questions that this raises.
Yes.
But before we get to those questions, I want to sort of run through the series of events that followed the release of that videotape.
Okay.
Predictably, there was outrage, rightfully so, amongst many people. I was outraged hearing it. One might speculate that that such utterances might be incompatible with position of high leadership.
Well, I don't think so, unfortunately, but we can talk about that.
We can talk about that.
But I also wasn't outraged.
You weren't outraged?
I wasn't surprised.
No, I wasn't either. And that's really where I'm going with this.
I was surprised in that it was so accessible.
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise. But then also predictably, elected Republicans began to either disown Trump or to distance themselves from him in many ways, which begs a number of questions. Perhaps the most obvious is, really, it took you this long? There wasn't one of his previous utterances or statements or anything, any number of things wasn't quite enough, but this was a bridge too far?
I look at it as a Monty Python moment. Run away, run away.
Yeah, run away.
Run away.
Right.
And that's what the Republicans are doing. They're running away.
That's what the Republicans are doing. And correspondingly, the Democrats are smelling blood in the water and looking to perhaps do some real damage down ticket on the ballot. Now, before you call up and tell me how there's no difference at all between the two major parties, we've hashed that one out many, many times. I suspect we'll do that again today. Now, right now, would have been the perfect opportunity for third or fourth parties to begin asserting themselves if those people who complain every 4 years about the lack of choices they get from the two major parties or how disappointed they are in the two major party nominees. Had you spent this intervening time over the past several election cycles actually building third party efforts at the local and state levels, now might be the time because the iron is hot. Now might be the time, for example, if that Green Party infrastructure were there for Greens to actually start being elected to Congress. So now might have been the perfect time had that work actually been done.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, we have structured a system without any really careful planning. In fact, the original constitutional fathers, remember, no mothers, really did not want political parties. So the way in which our whole system is structured is built around the idea of I would call it pseudo-democracy. And that has persisted despite reforms, despite including women as voters, despite the direct election of senators, all the things that have improved things. It's still a system that is basically closed. So, yeah, I find fault with the failure of third parties to ever get anywhere in American politics. But for me, it's structural.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, yeah.
Certainly. You could also argue, I think, pretty convincingly that it was naive of the founders to think that people would not eventually fracture into various party affiliations.
Well, I don't think they didn't think that would happen. I think they tried to build a system that made it hard to happen.
No, instead, they built a system in which it seems to work best with two parties.
Yeah.
This strange bipolar approach we take to everything.
Well, the creation of the Republican Party, as probably most of our listeners know, was occasioned by the collapse of the Whig Party over the issue of slavery.
Right.
So you suddenly find this not new, but constantly repeating, constantly reappearing crisis of injustice that is the economic engine for the entire social system. You have the lords of the lash, lords of the loom. And when you have a setup like that, where the internal economy is actually, in fact, dependent upon the free labor of people who are enslaved, you run into problems. You run into problems apart from the moral issues, the ethical issues, the notions of the evil of slavery under traditions of Judeo-Christian beliefs.
Indeed, you do run into problems. In fact, the problems that we ran into dwarf the divide that we face today. Not even close.
Well,
so when I hear people saying, "Oh, the country's never been more divided," well, no, the country has been more divided, and the fallout was far worse than anything we faced.
Well, and we've had historic moments where there was a significant left in America, various times throughout the late 19th century and into the 20th century, and really through World War II. At the end of World War II, a concerted effort was made to strip away from a Soviet influence anything of a left-wing nature. At the same time, there was an effort to demonize any kind of socialist or progressive effort, and it was pretty effective. So we were, for a long time, left with kind of liberalism of Adlai Stevenson, people like that, as if it were somehow the left in America. So we've very much narrowed the discourse. Right. And this narrow discourse has continued. The challenges made during the Vietnam War, when the obvious stupidity of the war was ignored by the ruling classes, the failure of a massive movement, mostly of young people, but not only of young people, during that period of time, and then, of course, Kent State and other things, demonstrated the absolute inability of the system to respond to protest. And since that time, really, we have seen a lot of crises that have been overwhelmed by systemic control. Right now, interestingly, there is a really serious fight going on, totally unrelated to this election, which is the struggle over where pipelines for natural gas and toxic oil will go. Whether they will go through sacred lands of Native Americans, their sacred lands have been ignored and abused forever since the white man came. Whether or not, in fact, you can run a pipe underneath the Missouri River, and whether or not you can endanger the Ogallala Aquifer. All of this is happening and is getting not much coverage in the newspapers or in the press. And it's a big thing. It's a big deal. But it's typical. The way in which any kind of serious challenge is made to the system is not so much through repression, although that takes place. I mean, it's always the FBI, there's always local police, there's always local landowners. But more important than that is simply the willful ability of the press to ignore things that are disturbing or that are challenging or that are, in fact, efforts to make a major reform. So, you know, here we are.
Yeah, I completely disagree.
You completely disagree? Really?
No, not entirely. I disagree with the part when you talked about the inability of protest to change anything, and you're talking about the context of the Vietnam War. I would submit that the protest movement and the civil rights movement that existed very much in parallel changed everything. It brought an end to that war. And eventually brought an end to conscription into the armed forces.
Well,
And it forced the media to actually pay attention to these things which were uncomfortable. Walter Cronkite went to Vietnam, and that was essentially the beginning of the end for that war.
You know, I think it's important. Here's where we probably disagree. I certainly think that the civil rights movement was both necessary and important and incredibly brave and brilliantly carried out using the ideas of Gandhi and others.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, no question about that. And I cannot speak for persons of color, and I will not, but obviously from my experience, I'm kind of old guy, from my experience, the situation that I see in terms of who's got jobs and how they're treated and so on, in general in America, and most particularly on the two coastal areas and much of the North, is much improved. And the laws are better. That's true. But I do not believe the Vietnam War ended because of the protest movement. I believe the Vietnam War ended because the United States had its ass kicked.
Yeah, there was that too.
Well, that too, yes. Yeah. Well, it was unwinnable from the beginning. It was bad thinking, bad thought about a misunderstanding of a kind of a monolithic commie thing, when in fact the Soviet Union and China were already split, when in fact there was all kinds of dissent, when in fact there was dissent within the Soviet bloc, when in fact Vietnam had no interest in being the ally of the Soviet Union or more particularly China.
But our purpose today is not to rehash the Vietnam War.
Well,
okay,
no.
we've gotten kind
you
of
brought
far...
it up. You brought it up.
No, I did not.
It's your fault.
We got kind of far into the weeds here, but I think we can agree that the movements of the 1960s and the 1970s for civil rights and against the Vietnam War was the last significant large scale mobilization of leftist resistance that this country has seen. There was a significant backlash to that, sort of the kick the hippies movement. That eventually delivered to us the Ronald Reagan presidency.
And marijuana.
Right, and the war on drugs and so on.
And now
so
marijuana is a legal enterprise.
Right. And even before the Ronald Reagan presidency, you had the Richard Nixon presidency, which was itself based upon, well, first of all, law and order, which was code for keeping people of color in their place.
Yes.
And very much... animated by the sort of punch the hippies attitude I was just discussing.
Right.
So the Ronald Reagan presidency comes along, a massive conservative backlash to the liberal assertions of the 60s and 70s. And to counter that, eventually we came up with the watered down centrist corporate friendly Democratic Party invented by Bill Clinton and his compatriots, which was enough, even with a plurality of the vote in 1992, to win him the White House. But since that time, the Democratic Party has been a shadow of the progressive force that it once was.
Well, I think the only time when the Democratic Party, in fact, was at all social democratic, which I think is the correct term, was during the crisis of the Great Depression.
Indeed.
And in fact, the only president that embodied that clearly was Roosevelt.
I would argue that... that Truman and Johnson embodied that as well.
I think Truman, to some degree, though he intellectually was pretty unclear,
right.
Let's put it that way. But in the case of Johnson, Johnson was responding to a crisis that threatened everything.
Okay, again, I don't want to get too far into the weeds here because we want to...
You keep talking about weeds. Ain't no weeds.
Well,
it's all mold.
We are getting pretty far into the weeds.
It's all clean.
But getting us back to present...
Putting chemicals on the ground.
Getting us back to present day... The movements of the 60s and 70s were the last large-scale expression of leftist power in this country, even to the extent that in the early 2000s, when a Republican administration was clearly lying us into an ill-advised war in the Middle East, the left was not sufficiently organized to offer sufficient resistance to that effort.
Well, it's hard to argue about whether or not things were adequately organized because obviously they weren't effective. Therefore, they must not have been. But I would argue that the entrenched power structure has become more powerful, more controlling, and more defining, really, really more defining of what are the limits of resistance in this culture. And we are in a very conservative, what I love to call, and I hate to say it again, late stage capitalism, early stage fascism. That's real.
Yeah, I know you love to say that.
Well, it's also true. That's why I love to say it.
Yes. Yes. But counter to that is what I think will ultimately be more telling, and that is the approach. And we're approaching it rapidly towards a demographic tipping point in this country. And that point is, and I think it's, what, about three decades off now, according to projections, the point at which white people will cease to be a majority in the United States of America. And it is that demographic trend, I believe, and we've talked about this many times on this show, that animates the insecurity in the conservative base such that they were able and willing to nominate a guy like Donald Trump for
the
GOP.
What you're saying, I guess, is that Trump is the product of the racist reaction.
Trump is a product of the racist reaction.
Well, it's hard to argue with that.
It is very hard to argue with that. And as the language in this videotape makes clear, his attitudes belong, I think, to an age, if not already bygone, is on its way out. Because look at the reaction to what he said. Even establishment Republicans are distancing themselves from him, are withdrawing their endorsements of him, or they're weaseling about it the way Paul Ryan is. And I think that this attitude, coupled with what happened at the debate on Monday night, is going to appeal to nobody but the racist base that elected him in the primary. And I think at this point he has little or no chance of winning.
You mean the 30 to 40% of Americans?
The 30, well, that number is in some dispute.
Well, of course it's in dispute. Nobody knows.
He wasn't even elected with a majority of Republican support in most cases, in most primaries.
That's true.
He won most of his primary victories with a plurality of the vote. Even within the conservative voting bloc, his support is not unanimous. And as we've seen, much of the support for him in the general election is based on tribal affiliation. I'm going to support him because he's a Republican. But even now, you're seeing that support erode away. What's left is the howling, racist, insecure, white base that gave him the nomination. And that's all he's got. That's
well,
all.
And increasingly, that support group turns out to be boys.
Yeah.
No girls. Boys.
Good old boys.
Nah, boys. A lot of boys.
Okay. What he said, if you hadn't heard that recording, if you haven't heard it yet, was pretty bad. And the predictable defense of his words has been, well, this was locker room talk. This was boys being boys. But I think we need to draw a very important distinction here. Yes, men are known to boast about their sexual escapades. This is a known thing. This happens in locker rooms and in other contexts. But let's be very, very clear here. It is one thing for men to boast among themselves about their sexual escapades. It is quite another to do as Donald Trump did and assert that one's celebrity entitles them to commit sexual assault, which is what he did. He said, I'm famous, therefore I can do whatever I
want.
You know,
the thing that shocks people is the, is this a word we can use? Starts with a P and ends with a Y?
No, I don't think we should use that word.
We can't use that word?
Let's not use that word. Let's elect not to use that word.
Let's just not use that word. Anyway, I do believe, I really truly do believe that it is less that comment I see as significant, really significant, than in terms of his demographics, than the fact that he discusses with great pleasure his inordinately aggressive attempt to persuade a married woman to become his sexual partner.
Yeah, there was that as
that
well.
That is where it goes to the heart of the notions of the sacredness of the family, of the absolute control of the family over the male person in the family. It goes to the heart, in other words, of that 30 to 40% which normally seem to like him.
Yes, so this poses a conundrum for conservative supporters of Donald Trump. They've already had to tie themselves into knots trying to reconcile their alleged family values with the life that this guy has lived. Now that becomes even more difficult. And really, they've got nothing now to fall back on but his full-throated embrace of racism and xenophobia. Look at what happened in that debate on Monday night. His base, I'm sure, is just crowing about that debate because finally he got up on stage and offered a full-throated, aggressive condemnation of Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. This is the sort of primal scream that conservatives have wanted to hear for 20 years now, and he gave it to them. But for those people who actually think rationally, those people who think maybe misogyny is a bad thing, maybe racism is a bad thing, maybe xenophobia is a bad thing, maybe militarism and nationalism are bad things, they're never going to support him.
Well, they never were.
No, I think there's a lot of people who were going to support him because he was the Republican nominee, and now they can't.
You think Republicans, a broad category of who knows what, I might add, you think Republicans are not those things. And I think America is those things, pretty much, and the Republicans are the absolute embodiment of it. I have a much darker view of this country than you do.
No, the Republican Party is not as monolithic as you're making it out to be.
No, the Republican Party is nothing. I don't mean the Republican Party. I mean those who support the Republican Party. It's a different
thing. I agree.
Thing.
Those people are not as monolithic as you would make them out to be. Enough of them are racists and bigots and xenophobes and nationalists to give Donald Trump the nomination. But there are those who characterize themselves as fiscally conservative, as socially conservative, who reject his overt bigotry and his nationalism. But they were felt compelled to support him because they could never, as people who tribally identify with Republicans, they could never support the Democratic nominee, especially when that nominee was named Hillary Clinton. But now even those people are finding it impossible to support Donald Trump. He's managed to open a schism in a party that heretofore has been nearly unanimous in its support of its nominee for cycle after cycle.
Yeah, and basically unanimous in not dealing with all of the things that we've talked about a bit ago. But let's go to the phones.
Let's do
and
that.
Give people a chance. 231-8187.
Corey,
you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Thanks for the show. To Abe's point, and I called the show and I post on Facebook, but to Abe's point, what he did is that he offended white women. And right there is what it's what's causing all this faux outrage is what I call it. He made comments about the Central Park Five. No one was really. I'm still going to support Trump. He made comments about Muslims, Latinos, Latino women, calling that Miss America, Miss Universe, Miss Housekeeping. And now all of a sudden he offends white women and people are, I can't support this guy. I just find that funny and amusing. And this goes all the way back to. White women are, and I'm married to a white woman. I love everybody, but white women are a protected class. So when you offend them, there's this paternal instinct among these Republican men. That's why they have these sort of you know archaic abortion laws that we have to protect these women. If you even go back to, and I don't want to go back too far. You guys keep talking about the weeds, but the reason marijuana is illegal, marijuana causes white women to seek sexual relations with Negroes, entertainers, and others. That's back from Reefer Madden.
Right. Once
he offended white women, people are like, uh-oh, because we have to protect these women. It's just, like I said, it's paternal. And also, I knew he wasn't going to win. I've been saying this. If you look at the Electoral College, and Abe made this point, and Joe made this point as well, if you look at what's happening with the demographics, there was no way for him to get to 270. It's even harder now. He'll get the same states. He'll get Alabama. He'll get Kentucky, et cetera, et cetera. It's changing. And you guys had a show a couple months ago. Those people, the ones his hardcore voters, these people are dying out. And so this is them acting a fool, you know, making a stink, but their power, they're losing control of that power. But yeah, as soon as he offended, and I even told my wife this, like, you know, if he ever says something about white women in general, or maybe one specific white woman, they're going to act a fool. And this is what he did. He made a comment about a married white woman, and now, like I said, it's faux outrage, because he's been making all types of ignorant comments for the past several months, and nothing. Now, all of a sudden, we have to hunker down. This guy's not our guy. It's hilarious.
Yeah, you got to wonder why it took people so long.
Well, because some of these people have a racial blind spot. But not only that, they don't care. But as soon as, like I said, I find it to be funny, but it's also quite sickening. We have to protect these women because they can't protect themselves, number one. But it's, to me, it's faux outrage. It's not real. It's not real from any of these, it's not real from John McCain. It's not real from any of these guys. These guys are all of a sudden now Paul Ryan. Now we have to step down and, you know, we can't support this guy. Where were you guys, you know, 4 or 5 months ago?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Exactly.
So I'll leave it at that. I appreciate the guys' show.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, hard to argue with that, really.
Yeah.
I mean, on the one hand, I suppose it's good that those conservative men who are outraged by Trump's comments are outraged because they, you know, they perceive these comments as directed toward their wives and their daughters and so on. It would be nice if they had that same sense of concern for women in general, regardless of whom they happen to be.
I think they're outraged because they're going to lose the election. See, I don't believe in ideology in any of these people. Seriously, I don't. I don't believe that there's a strong ideology in the Democratic Party. I don't believe there's a strong ideology in the Republican Party. I think the ideology of both parties is winning and holding power. And I am not at all convinced that there is a stronger, more valid position per se, you know, just by itself, in the Democratic Party than in the Republicans. I think they're both parties leading us inevitably to a system that disengages democracy from the people.
True.
And I'm very worried about that. I wanted to say one thing, and then we should go back to the phones. I think we should let our callers dominate us today. There's a neat column by David Brooks in today's New York Times in which he uses a psychiatric diagnosis as a description of Trump. and I had I went to the regular dictionaries and couldn't find it. Found it finally in a list of crazinesses. It's narcissistic alexithymia. That's in that Latinish thing, narcissistic alexithymia. And it really talks about an individual who's unable to either understand their own narcissism or to relate to others in any way. Part of narcissism is you don't see others. And this is Trump in huge, huge terms. And the guy is really a psychotic, you know, a crazy person who, because he had a good audience out of television, and because television dominates so much of the lives of ordinary people, and because the popular media is absolutely amoral, he was allowed to fire people on the air, which gave a lot of people a jolt of pride and joy at seeing somebody powerful humiliate somebody else. Very sick to begin with. That went on and on and on for 11 years, and that is his base. Fundamentally, that is his base. Joining that base are a lot of people who, for religious reasons and for power relations and racist reasons and others and sexism, were his supporters. Now it becomes unfashionable. Now it becomes untenable, particularly when you attack the institution of marriage, as he did in that recording. And that's why I think that is more important than his reference to sexual aggression toward women, per se.
All right, I want to circle back to this, but you're right. I think we should go to the phones. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM. If you'd like to call up and join the conversation, you may do so at 503-231-8187. We also welcome your written comments on our Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or on the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. So let's go to the phones. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, and I was going to talk about how, speaking of sexual predators, you have to remember who his former media mogul is, Roger Ailes, and how him and Roger Stone, and you can go all the way back to...
I'm glad you mentioned Roger Stone.
Yeah, and then you can go all the way back to when he was a lap dog for Roy Cohn back in the 70s. And I was going to say, well, Nixon did bring in the war on drugs and counterintelligence programs to really destroy the left progressive movements. You also had people-powered movements in Ralph Nader and other organizations to help push forward the EPA and some other environmental and labor and safety regulations. But as far as you look at it now, you definitely see that these are the kind of folks who are losing their power in the world and then also losing their power in the workplace as well. And so, thanks you guys for the great conversation.
Yeah, thank you for the call. Who else we have, Kathleen? Sean, good morning.
Well, first of all, I want to say, Joe, you're absolutely right. I agree with you. I don't think there is any ideology in it. It's just about a power structure. It really is just about strictly them. You know, the fact is that I'm not a big fan of David Brooks, but it's interesting that you brought up narcissism. Because I've been thinking about how nobody has been willing to really bring up that word in regards to Donald Trump. But it also really has to do with both of them and the parties in terms of ultimately what are they really about. It's really about just holding on to power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that's true. And I truly believe what we're seeing
Donald
all...
Donald Trump truly is, he's an absolute, the worst kind of narcissist.
Well, that's true. But, you know, when we look at what's going on in Western Europe, an enormous reaction to persons of color, to people of Islamic faith, we see enormous reactions all over the so-called enlightened, and I put so-called on that very seriously, enlightened world of the West. What we're seeing all over the world right now is a tendency toward centralized dictatorial rule and justification thereof by fear and by anger and by sense of outrage at the fact of difference. And this is a really bad trend, and I argue that it is really dominated by the total dependence on a set of power relations with a minority who hold all the coin.
Right, and I agree, and which is my main point, really, of my call, and to kind of build upon what Chris just essentially touched upon, mm-hmm. and that is this, that if you remember Obama, when he was more or less elected, to get rid of, he's told us, if you want to get rid of all these problems going on, then make me do it.
I remember you saying that.
Do you remember that statement?
Yeah.
Okay, so to tie it in, that's a co-opted statement that he actually took from FDR.
From FDR.
And then FDR, he used that when he got elected and during the New Deal, that I want to tie that in, that during that time of FDR, there were almost 5,000 protests in the country for different reasons. And currently, there are maybe a handful, a dozen to 20 protests.
Yeah, I don't know numbers,
and,
so I can't
argue.
And
it is, and actually it's one of the things Naomi Klein points out in Shock Doctrine, mm-hmm. is, and it ties into that key word that you used, and that's fear, that they have done, the power establishment has done a very good job of making people comfortable in their luxuries and complacent in their politics. And fear has driven them to not really stand up and speak out much anymore. And, you know, I mean, really, a lot of that has to do is since the 60s and 70s, it has really dropped off.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's the point I wanted to make.
Well, I appreciate the call, man.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Yep. Take care. Abraham, you look like you're thoughtful.
I am.
So rare, I wanted to praise you for that.
I think you missed the mark when you say that ideology doesn't factor into any of this that's going on. Yes, you're right that the central to the establishment Republicans' concerns right now is maintaining a grip on power.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's more or less always the case.
Okay.
When we're talking about political context, mm-hmm. contests. But to suggest that the Republican electorate is not motivated by ideology, I think is off the mark. We just spent most of the show talking about how racism and xenophobia and nationalism are animating this segment of the base, even to the extent that they're able to push a guy like Trump to be the nominee. How is that not connected to?
Well, I don't think the Republicans pushed Trump to be the nominee. The
Republican electorate did.
Yeah, voters. And I don't think my point, which I guess I didn't make very well, is that there is no such thing as the Republican electorate. What there is are series of interest groups, most of them reactionary, as you have indicated, who are finding a home in the Republican Party and not in the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party tried back in the day of Clinton, male Clinton, to build a centrist party base that would be stronger, more embracive of everybody, and less, in fact, a progressive movement. And that effort worked to some extent. Now we are left with two parties, which are essentially on the right, and we are left in the alternative with a few, you know, a few conservative efforts and a kind of totally, as far as I can tell, off the mark, seriously not able to build grassroots movement, which you also alluded to, Green Party. And what it all comes down to is, this is my view only, not Abe's, and I want to be clear on this. I believe that we will, in the end up with Hillary Clinton because she's the only viable choice. She really is competent to be a president, which actually bothers me because I believe she's a neocon, and I want everybody to vote for her. Ooh, how horrible. Oh, I can't even say that because, in fact, I believe she will get us further into war. Now, Trump, on the other hand, would get us into so many horrible things. It was unbelievable. So, you know, here we are. Bad choices. And really, the end of any kind of meaningful democracy. I'm sorry. That's how I see things.
Yes. I would have to agree.
You're agreeing with me.
Yeah, well, I agree with you much of the time, Joe.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it plays better on the radio when I disagree with you.
Oh, okay. It's just an act.
The specter, though, that we were confronted with during this last debate, and I'm talking about a sexual predator and a racist on the stage berating a woman about the past peccadilloes of her husband.
Really?
And yeah. Then threatening her with imprisonment. That was a low point.
Oh, I think it was the highest point. I think it was his best argument. If I'm president, I'll put her in jail. Who could argue with that?
That I can. That shouldn't happen in a self-respecting democracy. That's what happens in a banana republic. That's what dictators do. That's what Putin does. Possibly that's why Trump likes the idea so much. You don't threaten your political opponents with imprisonment. That's counter to the values we go around so loudly trumpeting
all the time.
Well, come on.
We threaten and, in fact, put communists in jail in this country in the 20s and other times, and certainly post-World War II.
Yes, we did. I would like to think that we've learned something since then.
Well, but why do you think we've learned something since then?
Because,
what is the
Joe,
evidence?
And this is where you and I differ fundamentally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that I'm an optimist, and you are not.
I think I can't even argue with that. I look at history. I've taught history for a long, long time. I know this stuff. I'm pretty much convinced that what I say, though rhetorically perhaps too dramatic, is nevertheless correct. And I am sadly willing to bet that with a president of the choices we have now, we will be enmeshed further in a war that was created by a lying Cheney and an incompetent Bush for reasons of the interests of the oil industry, period.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's real. And that's going on. And that's the rationalization that continues on and on. We've actually made angry the oil potentates, the followers of Islam, people in the developing third world. And we've done that with impunity so far because we have so much weaponry. But, you know, the Russians see an opportunity here. Others seeing an opportunity. Chinese are seeing an opportunity in the East. It's not a stable environment for the United States. The United States is the old man of this game, and it's not playing well. We have a lot of callers, though. 231-8187.
This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM, your community radio station in Portland and beyond. If you want to comment on writing, you can do so at facebook.com/AbeandJoe. Also at the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Let's go to the phones. Francis, good morning.
Hey. There are protests every day in a whole lot of cities of this country, every single day now, mm-hmm. against police violence and mass incarceration.
I'm glad you brought that up.
It's not covered by the media.
Right.
Jill Stein's platform covers every single issue that KBOO ever discusses, from global warming to mass incarceration to whatever, but she doesn't get any corporate media coverage in a proper way. Don't tell me.
I'm sorry, Francis. I apologize. We had to let you go. We had a word squeak in there that we shouldn't have. But to address your point, Jill Stein is an impressive politician. She's clearly a woman of courage. She's unafraid to even put her body in harm's way for the causes in which she believes, and that is laudable. But I stand by my earlier statement that the Green Party and third parties in general would be far more effective force in American politics if they were to spend more time between four-year election cycles building themselves at the local and state level.
Well, and I have to praise, I cannot remember her name, how embarrassing, the woman who was a member of the city council in Seattle, who ran as a socialist in the Seattle election. She's a person of third world heritage. She has been successful. And the city council of Seattle, dominated, by the way, by women, has done some very good work. I contrast this to Portland, where I consider our city council totally... I can't even say
sure
the word.
That word is.
That word I cannot say.
John writes into the Facebook page, that's facebook.com/AbeandJoe, to say, interestingly, I have heard many of the now scrambling GOP elite state their condemnations with, quote, as a father of X number of daughters, X number of sisters, etc. But none have started with, I'm a father of X number of sons, and I did not teach nor condone any such behavior. That's a very good point. Most of the conservative opposition to Trump's latest outrage, and I think you accurately characterize it as faux outrage, Joe, has really been around what he said about women. None of these guys are coming out and saying, that's not how to be a man.
And
that's
also,
an important part of this
also
conversation.
Another
as
important
well.
Part of this that I don't want to spend time exploring too much, but it's important. This is men reasserting their possession of their women. Yes, it's not really about women as independent free agents, unfortunately. And it is about possession. As I said earlier, it was not so much his graphic description of his sexual aggression toward women. Well, certainly that was important. But it is the fact that he says he spent an inordinate amount of time being aggressive toward a married woman in an effort to get her to commit adultery.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the one. I mean, that's the one, you know, hey, my lady, you don't do that with my lady, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree. It's at heart a possessive sort of thing, which is why I said earlier, I wish that this sort of compassion would extend to anybody, regardless of whether or not they happen to be your daughter or your sister or your wife.
Well, and I think all of this folds into the fact that we have created a society bound together by inequalities and differences rather than by commonalities and shared interests. And that works very well for a materialist society that totally measures everybody's worth by what they got, the stuff, the money, the loot, the big house, the whatever. And if you think that's not true, just look at how the economy exists.
Yeah, look at the price of housing in Portland.
Ah, the housing prices in Portland.
Before we go back to the phones, so we saw Donald Trump in terms of how he feels about women in that recording last week. We saw the depths of his vitriol during the debate on Sunday. This morning, Mr. Trump tweeted the following.
They ought to take his phone away.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
It is so nice that the shackles have been taken off me and I can now fight for America the way I want to.
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, yeah.
I want him to fight for America the way he wants to.
We haven't seen anything
yet.
You
ain't seen nothing yet. Oh, it's going to get really vicious and ugly and awful and mean and really, really, really low.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Charles, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. I'd like to mention a couple of positive things.
Wait, positivity? I don't know if we're ready. Go ahead.
The circus of Donald Trump, but I do have some two facts about him. Mm-hmm. Positive things is the Judeo-Christian Ten Commandments, people focusing on those, or yoga, the yamas, or moral principles to rule our life. If more people did this, we wouldn't be in this mess.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate what you said about the Green Party, because I actually did that over the last couple of years. I actually went out cabling and leafleting for the Green Party, and it was an interesting experience. It wasn't, I guess most people don't even have an awareness. It's not on their radar, the Green Party.
Unfortunately, that's true.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was very disappointing to see that. And of course, working with the Green Party, we tried to get a chapter going here locally, and that didn't fly. The people had brought their own agendas to the meeting. But the other positive thing I'd like to talk about is we depend on food. And it comes from soil, and we don't have enough healthy soil. And farmers need a lot of help, especially organic farmers who are doing a lot of things by hand. I think everyone should get out there and either start a garden or help somebody who has a garden. The points about Donald Trump, he went to a military academy. And he was expelled for beating unmercifully one of the other students.
Is that true? I didn't know that.
Really? I had not heard that either.
I don't know why it hasn't come.
I knew he went to military academy, and I knew he was regarded as a bully, but I didn't know that he beat anybody up.
I think it's funny that he said being in a military high school was equivalent to being in the Army. I thought that was hilarious.
Anyway, right. Please continue, sir.
Well, it is in a way, because if you've ever had a roommate who was in a military academy, if you touch or go near their bedroom door, they are up and standing because there's so many raids where they, you know, throw water on you or shaving cream or whatever in the middle of the night in the high school. But anyway, he was expelled. His father conveniently donated enough money to build a building, and they accepted him back, but he wasn't charged with the crime. And my friend who went to high school with him was in a fancy New York restaurant one time, and Donald Trump was on the other side of the room, and somehow Donald Trump eyed him and recognized his face but couldn't place it. And he screamed over his own party and everybody in the room, you, I know you. And my friend had to identify himself, and that was the end of the interaction. Hmm. So he hasn't changed from high school.
Well, that's good. Oh, that's good to know. Anyway, hey, thanks a lot for the close-in report there.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. Who's next, Kathleen? Harry, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call. We were talking about a hot mic incident. The reporter was actually a Bush relative.
Yeah. Billy
yeah, Bush.
And he was suspended.
From his job at the Today Show. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but not fired, interestingly.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And another hot mic incident that happened was the British election that happened 6 years ago when Cameron became prime minister. Mm-hmm. He ran against Tony Blair's protege, I can't think of his name, but they had a hot mic incident there where he left the mic on, he got in the car and he left, and it was still on and they recorded something, and that cost him the election.
Yeah, these things can really hurt you politically.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, and this was a wireless mic. He never knew it was on, and here he is driving away, and they're still picking up what he said.
Well, you know, the first famous hot mic thing that I know of, and this is going to anger you, Abe, because it has nothing to do with any of this, but it's interesting, which is that there was a very popular children's radio show a long time ago, post-war, to Uncle Don's radio show, and he would tell stories and have, you know, a kids show on the radio, and he thought his mic was off, and then he said something like, that ought to hold them, the little bastards, and that was the end of his career.
Wow. Another incident was Jesse Jackson and Obama. That's why Jesse Jackson was never invited to the White House. Because he made a comment and it got picked up, and that's why they never talk.
Well, there's a rule in television and radio. There's no such thing as a dead mic.
Oh, true. One last thing. The largest anti-war protest in the world was when we invaded Iraq in 2003.
That was bigger than the revelations of our attacks on Laos and Cambodia?
Yeah. In fact, what happened was the protests, they surrounded CNN, Fox, all the major news media. That's where the protests happened. Mm. And on the streets and everything else, and none of the media mentioned it. CNN didn't mention that there were people outside protesting the war.
I'm shocked. Fox and everything. Shocked.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. There was that simultaneous day of worldwide protest, as I recall.
Yes.
Huge.
Yeah, it was huge. Well, that's all I have. Thanks a lot.
It's good to remind us, and it's important to understand. I think there's a danger in my kind of criticism that I really do see. It might encourage despair, which an old advisor of mine, Dorothy Day, said she said it's a Catholic sin, but it's a sin. The idea that you just give up and go into despair and engage in dark thought and don't do anything about things, even though it's apparently helpless, pointless to do anything. And I think I talked about this last week when I talked about the idea that you just don't know the various forces involved. And if you do the right thing, you have a chance of being part of something that may very well turn into a better thing. And I want to emphasize that. I mean, I may believe that we are in a very dark time. I may believe that this is a very dangerous time. I may believe that we are closer to nuclear war than ever before, that the environment is collapsing. All these things do not mean that things cannot change where there is the will and the willingness to act. And I hope that people who hear this show are not darkened to the point where they don't want to do things. I really believe that whenever, you know, whenever and wherever there is action against an establishment that is destructive, you and I and anyone should be there. Really.
Yeah.
So I just want to get that out there because I don't really want to pitch an absolute impossibility for change.
Is there a spark in the depths of your dark heart, Joe?
A spark?
A ray of light.
A ray of light, a tiny bit of fire.
A tiny beacon of hope.
Well, you know, it is always possible that things can get better. And human beings have survived amazingly. I mean, but of course we are mean animals.
Yeah, we are. We are. We jockey for dominance at the end of the day, which explains Donald Trump's success to a large extent.
Well, no, I really believe Trump was made by the media and by opportunism, and he is the archetype of the archetypal consequence of a heedless desire to gain audience.
And I think, say what you will about the guy, he's not stupid.
Yeah, no, I disagree. I actually disagree.
You disagree?
Oh, yeah, I think he is stupid.
I think he sized up the conservative electorate and knew exactly what he could sell
to them. Well, I'm not sure he did that. People who created him did that. I'm not sure he has any brain whatsoever. I actually think the guy is so narcissistic that he's a cripple. Hmm. He's actually an intellectual cripple. And he's talking about he's going to bring the world down. I mean, that is really stupid.
Yeah.
When he was hulking on that stage Sunday, he had to have known that what he had to do was, you know, just get through the debate, argue the case, keep a reasonable, civil profile. He couldn't do it. He could not do it.
No, that's true.
And that says to me, stupid.
He still knew exactly what to say to the conservative electorate to get himself the nomination.
Well, yeah, but again, this is something that would never have happened if the media hadn't built him into a real person. I mean, look at these terrible, terrible television shows that do so well.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I can't argue with you there.
I mean, you know.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Michael, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you guys?
Hey, I haven't heard from you in a while, Michael. What's up?
Well, these things happen. I think that it's really impossible to tell what's going to happen. And what I can't figure out is the Trump phenomenon more like the Bernie phenomenon in that he says exactly what a very passionate subset of the population wants to hear?
Are you suggesting that's what Bernie Sanders did?
Well, I mean, just look at the rallies. Bernie Sanders had, what, 27,000 people here? The only other politician this year that's had rallies that are big like that is Trump. So in that sense is what I'm saying.
Right. So the crowds.
And he had a bird. Don't forget he had a bird.
Crowds of equivalent size mean equivalent ideologies? I don't follow you.
No.
Bernie is as close to a genuine politician of integrity as you're going to find on the national landscape.
I'm not talking about ideologies. I'm talking about enthusiasm.
You suggested that Bernie's success derived from the fact that he said exactly what he thought his audience wanted to hear.
Well, no, he said exactly what his audience wanted to hear.
Is that what I just said?
All
right. Anyway, continue. I'll let you talk.
No, the point is enthusiasm. The point is there's an enthusiastic group of people in both cases. In the case of the Bernie campaign, it wasn't big enough to get him the nomination, plus all the machinations. In the Trump case, it was big enough to get him the nomination. But here's what I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows. This election could turn out the way the Democratic nomination turned out, which is that Hillary got it instead of Bernie, or it could turn out the way Brexit turned out, where it turns out the kind of invisible enthusiasts are big enough to actually do something. I don't know which one of those is true.
Well, I think you're raising, I actually hate agreeing with you, but I think it's a very valid point. We have no idea who the people who are embarrassed to admit they like Trump will in fact go and vote for the guy. So we don't know. We don't know how this election is going to go. And I think anyone who stays away from the polls for their reasons of appeal or lack of appeal for whatever candidate are making a big mistake. It's really real. And I want to emphasize something that I really, really believe is true. Trump is as Hitlerian and out front fascist as you could imagine in American politics. And to underestimate that or dismiss it as merely an act is a big mistake.
Well, be that as it may, that's a whole other conversation. The two other points I wanted to make...
We'll have to do it quick. I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Two other points that are both very quick. My theme song for this election is a Bob Dylan song, and the end of each verse goes, because you know that something's happening, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? And I kind of feel like singing that every time the talking heads get on and claim they know what's going on.
Oh, hey, we've run out of time, man. You won't get your next point, but I do appreciate your call. And I appreciate all of you who called. And we're going to talk about more stuff. And I think next week we're going to try to do the ballot measures if we can.
If we can.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
From those bands to Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 9 o'clock. Coming up this morning on The Boo at 10 o'clock, we'll hear Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, AIM co-founder Bill Means speaks out against the racist dual standard by which John Hinckley Jr. is freed while Leonard Peltier remains behind bars. And Pablo Alvarado discusses his music and activism. At 11 o'clock on Stage and Studio, host D-May Roberts talks with Inventive Portland director Samantha Vandermeer, artistic director of Shaking the Tree Theater. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan interviews curator Rick Axum about Andy Warhol prints, the biggest ever show of Warhol prints now showing at the Portland Art Museum. Coming up next is Alternative Radio. Bobby Seals speaks on the Black Panther Party.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings.